back to the Tales of Deconia, where legends are born, myths are made, and adventures as common as commoners. I'm your DM, Andy. And today we have a special episode where I am joined by two good friends of mine from the Casual Commander podcast. Chris and Tim, why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
Hello.
Hello.
I was going to say, you've got such a better intro than we have.
I can't take credit for that. So the original campaign, the original DM came up with that. So I have to give it up to Pete for coming up with it. Okay. And then I just kind of borrowed it from him. So
I respect that. Ours is just us saying our names. Hi, yeah. Guys, I'm Chris.
And I'm Tim.
And we're Casual Commander.
There's nothing wrong with that, though, because I feel like simplicity is always better.
I feel like we discussed it and we were like, we really want our intro to say the name of the podcast while also saying the names of us. And I feel like we captured that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think we knocked that. Yeah, we knocked that out of the park.
So today we are having Chris and Tim on, who, if you can't tell by the name of their podcast, are hosts of a wonderful Magic the Gathering Commander format podcast. The reason why we're doing this collaboration, for some of the D&D players who may not know that, Magic the Gathering, Wizards of the Coast, who also make D&D, are doing a collaboration release. So the newest release set for Magic is Baldur's Gate. So I reached out to our friends here, Chris and Tim, and asked if they wanted to do something like this, and thankfully they said yes. So I appreciate you guys being here. And I think the first thing that I wanted to ask you guys is, what is your experience with Dungeons & Dragons?
I'll start. Mine's probably a shorter history than Chris's, because I actually played my first game with Chris, which is kind of, he got me into a lot of the nerdiest things in my life.
I have ruined your life, dude.
Yeah.
Not just
you were such a blue-eyed little, you know, goody two shoes when you came to work, and I was like, hey Tim, here's WoW and Magic and Dungeons and Dragons, and you were like, yes. Yes.
So it's not just the social side of things, he's also ruined you financially.
Well, absolutely. Definitely financially. Yeah, that's 100%. All the other stuff you could argue isn't ruining, right? Because I enjoy doing those things. But financially, yeah,
I'm still
got me into some expensive habits.
Still chipping away at the 40K though. I haven't gotten him to play 40K yet. I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't know. I might have to draw a line there. It also didn't interest me as much as the other ones. So
very well.
I also drew the line at 40K.
Yeah.
You're not alone.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I just said that you're not alone in that.
Oh, thanks. Mm-hmm. So I started playing D&D, what was it, like 3.5 years ago? Maybe 4 by this point. Played like a little one-shot with a group of friends, with like Chris and I's group of friends, and just to see if we liked it, just to see if it was something we'd want to do. And it was a lot of fun. Had a good time. I can't for the life of me remember what the class I played was in that one shot. And I'm actually feeling a little bummed about it, because it's, you know, that was part of my D&D history.
You mean you don't remember your first PC?
It was a pre-gen PC, though.
Yeah, it was a pre-gen.
Okay. I was going to say.
Well, so the first one I created, so after that, we decided that we all enjoyed it, so we wanted to play a full campaign. And it was pirate-themed, right? So it was really cool. And at the time, I was playing a lot of Divinity Original Sin. I'm sure yes. Andrew's played it. Chris, have you played it?
No, I have not gotten into Divinity.
That is surprising. If you like Baldur's Gate, the newest one, Baldur's Gate 3 that's out, you would love Divinity.
Yeah. I don't think Chris played that. No, Chris hasn't played Baldur's Gate either.
Nope.
Oof. Oof.
Striking out in the video game department. But So yeah, I was playing a lot of Divinity 2, and I really liked the rogue class because of all the cool things you could do, like teleporting behind people and backstabbing and all that fun stuff. So I decided to roll that for my first character.
So my first question is, were you the stereotypical edgelord rogue?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
What? No.
100%.
No.
You had a hat that was magically... I'm sorry, it was a bird that got magically enchanted into a hat that made women attracted to you.
Okay, hold on.
Wait, no, that is fine. We do not need context.
No. Edgar needs context.
Your tri-corner hat for the lady.
Yeah. Okay, so... let me explain myself. All right. So we went to this like major city and we were buying things. And I can't remember if I said I wanted to buy a raven or if we just like walked by a shop and our DM was like, this is a shop that sells exotic birds. So I bought a raven. And at one point, I think I pissed off our DM. And so we went to like a university in the same city. And we met one of the professors, and just for some reason, I asked the professor, like, could you see if there's anything magical about my bird? And he's like, well, it's not actually a raven, it's a crow. And I was like really bummed about it because I was like, oh no. I named him Edgar and everything. So like, and then Edgar Allan Poe, yeah. The raven.
It's Edgar Markrow, which is actually a very good pun.
Oh, yeah, that would have been better. But I was going with, like, you know, the raven, Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah.
So the next the next session we did, he got, like, sick for some reason. Like, the crow got sick. So we took him to, like, a raven shrine to get healed by, like, the raven goddess. And I had to, like, give up one of my possessions to heal him. And... the DM, like, after the fact was like, I thought you were going to, like, give up your bow or something so I could give you something cool. Instead, I gave up my tri-corner hat. And so he turned it into a tri-corner hat for the ladies, which gave me, like, I think it gave me advantage on all, like, charisma checks with the opposite gender. And so, yeah, so that's how Edgar turned into a hat.
Tim, I need you to remember something.
Okay.
Because... I know exactly. I was so upset when we had this. The mission to the raven goddess had nothing to do at all with the actual campaign. And the bird did not get sick. Tim was so upset that it was a crow that he went around looking for a way to magically transmute his crow into a raven.
That is not true. That is absolutely
100% true.
No,
it's 100% true.
Chris. Remember, it got sick when it came in contact with the cursed necklace that my girlfriend was using.
Why did you put a necklace on a bird?
It didn't put it on. It came like near it, and it was like getting sick.
Was that actually what happened?
Yes. Oh, that's 100%.
I remember that we saw a dragon, and I almost stole a bunch of gold from it, and everyone talked to me.
The dragon was like the guardian of the shrine. And yeah, you were trying to steal, and we were like, dude, we are not a high enough level to take on an elder dragon.
It would have been fine.
I'm sorry, there was an elder dragon?
I think it was at least a very powerful dragon. It might not have been an elder dragon, but it was...
No Tiamat sitting on the top of this raven shrine.
Okay, I definitely have had my fair share of TPKs where I DM'd with a dragon involved, so I understand where you're coming from. You were probably underleveled.
Yeah, we 100%. I think we were like maybe level 4.
I totally could have gotten that gold.
Oh my god.
No,
you couldn't have.
Yeah,
that was the DM taunting you, saying, "Ooh, look at the pretty shinies." Just hoping you were going to bring out your best Gollum impression, just for you guys to die. That's literally what the DM was doing.
Let's talk about my character in this campaign.
Which one, Chris?
The first one, which at the time was an okay character.
Uh-huh.
I played a monk, and I was a Tortolan monk. So I was essentially a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
That's fantastic.
But I was also an alcoholic. And so like I went like the path of like Drunken Master and did all kinds of like crazy stuff. So like every feat I took, every talent I took was all about trying to make myself fast and agile. So I was like this 400-pound wrecking machine of just absolute monkness.
That is amazing. I just picture like Master Oogway from Kung Fu Panda, just much younger and an alcoholic.
Yes, that's pretty entirely much, yeah. That's entirely what my character was. So because he was drunk all the time, he definitely made some questionable decisions, and seeing a giant pile of gold as a pirate thus would have made sense for him to take the gold.
Yes, I agree.
Except the whole party kind of, you know, said no to it.
Well, yeah, if there hadn't been a giant sentient dragon who was helping us out at the time, we might have been a little bit more on board with it.
I still think we should have done a lot more looting and a lot more killing. We were pirates. Every time we'd go to like a village, everyone was like, let's happy trade with the people here. And I'm like, guys, we're pirates. Like, let's just take it. We're pirates.
Yeah. I love the chaotic energy just flowing from you, Chris.
Well, yeah. Like, geez.
You were also a monk, and you were coming up with, we fought these people and we tied them up to interrogate them. And you were like, let's tie them up, throw them off the cliff into the river. And we're like, that's not very monk-like.
No witnesses.
No witnesses. I yeah, love
no
it.
Witnesses. That's very monk-like.
There were no witnesses anyway.
And so we're going to go tell people.
I'm sorry, I just have to bring this up because that single line makes me think of one of my current PCs, and I think you guys would get a kick out of this. So my older brother, Sam, plays a high elf? I think it's a wood elf paladin. And he came to me with the character concept of saying, I want to be a paladin, but I don't want to be like a goody-two-shoes paladin, so like, can my oath be to a mafia?
Okay.
And okay. I was like, I'm sorry, you want to do what now? And he was like, yeah, I want to be part of the mafia. I'm like, you understand what that means, right, Sam? And he said, yeah, I understand. So he's now, I fucked with him so much on this. Like, I kept the fact that his dad was like number two to the mafia boss hidden from him for like close to 15 sessions.
Oh, wow.
And then it was just like a bombshell. And then the next bombshell was that his dad was a changeling that got replaced while he was gone adventuring with the party. So now it's just this whole thing. But I just, the second you said no witnesses, my brain just went like, I'm sleeping with the fishes.
Yes, absolutely. I was trying to throw people in a river. So thus, yeah. Therefore, exactly, sleeping with the fishes. Well, yeah. Long story short, that character kind of did some questionable things mid-campaign. And I decided to change characters because I kind of got bored with the monk. Like, monk's
you
cool,
got bored, and then you sabotaged him, and yes. The group was yes. Like, okay.
Yes.
Gotcha.
And I switched to an artificer. Ooh. And I actually liked it. I was an alchemist.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole focus I was going for was I was a drug dealer.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so like I would sell people like health potions, but like with a high enough charisma score, like convince them like, hey, this is something real good, you know, and just sell like my transmuted potions to everybody.
That is amazing. And I love everything about that.
Yeah, I was a rock gnome, and I took like all of the armor mutations, because obviously if you're selling drugs, you got to be able to protect yourself.
Right.
So like I was a 3-foot walking tank. I think I had like an AC of like 23 or something
it,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Oh my god, an AC of 23.
You had like more constitution than our cleric, and like
yeah, I was tankier than the cleric, and I had more hit points than our druid, even like in bear form.
Yeah,
that's amazing. That is amazing. So I guess with all that said, what is your guys' favorite class to play?
Oh, that's a good question.
I've only played actually I don't even remember which class I played for the one shot, and so just I guess I can really only talk about the rogue. And I'm not gonna lie, the rogue got a little boring. I was trying to find ways to like spice up combat, because when we were role playing and everything, that was fine, right? I had super high charisma. I was like a swashbuckler subclass, so I had like all this like charm and everything, and so like that was fun. And then we would get into combat and it'd be like, okay, well, honestly, the best thing I can do is shoot my bow with sneak attack damage. Because if I got a crit, it was like, I'd be rolling like 12 D6s plus eight or something stupid. So like, so it kind of got boring towards the end. So I would try and do like a lot of like different things to like make it more fun. Like I had this dagger that we found that like, if I embedded it in any surface, I could teleport to it at any point. I could do that 3 times a day. So I tried to use that as much as I could.
Are you talking about like Minato from Naruto kind of thing? Like the flying Raijin? Are you guys familiar with anime?
I am not with Naruto. Minato is his dad, right?
Yeah, Minato is his dad. The former Hokage.
You're not familiar, but you can name the family tree, Tim.
Well, I didn't watch the series, I guess. So familiar, yes, but like, I don't, the reference to like, what, did he have a dagger that he could do that?
He had a dagger that he would throw and then would be able to instant teleport to it. Like,
basically the same concept.
Pretty much, yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, so I had a lot of fun doing that because I'd like do like acrobatic shit and that. Oh, wait, we can curse on here, right?
Yes.
Okay, so yeah, I'd do acrobatic shit and then I just like teleport away like right at the end. Kind of like, I wanted it to feel like Nightcrawler from, you know, X-Men.
Yeah.
And like do cool stuff like that. And then I also had these shoes that let me like climb on any surface. So I would use those a lot and just kind of like be shooting people from like, I'm hanging upside down, standing on a roof, shooting down at them.
You're hanging upside down, but standing on a roof. How does that work?
Or it's on the ceiling. Sorry. Not roof. Okay.
That is an insane build. I know rogues are actually pretty strong, but I do feel as though one of the main problems with the martial classes is that they get very stale very fast.
I have found the martial classes are way stronger early level.
Yes.
And then as you progress, the casters just outweigh because of the versatility that being a caster brings you.
Oh, and
absolutely.
Like, Not even just like, yes, versatility, but also they would get like spells where I forget which one Evie had. Evie is another person in our party, and she had like this one. It was like Toll of the Dead or something like that, and it did like 8d12 damage if it succeeded, and like half on a fail. It was insane, and I was like, okay, I might hit. And if I do, and I get like not a crit, it'd still be like 6d6.
I would argue though that the DM kind of made it easy for us. He never really threw like a anti-caster thing. You know what I mean? Like he never threw a shade or an illithid or something that really messes with your caster classes
or anything that has like resistance to magical damage or.
We had a couple of resistant things, but all we would do was just continue to throw spells at it and hope it worked.
And it was also never like resistant to every form of magic damage. It'd be resistant to like fire. So, okay, we'll switch it up and we'll do like necrotic damage or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
But that is true. We never really got anything like that.
Which is fine. Pretty much everybody in the group, other than myself and the DM, were new to D&D.
Very true, yeah.
And so I think part of it was helping introduce like some of the, as we got higher in level, you know, because we didn't play as frequently in the end, you know, it was hard to remember all the fun stuff that we could do. Mm-hmm. And so it was fun. Honestly, it turned into just a fun way for us to all hang out together.
Yeah,
while D&D was there.
Yeah, that's definitely the thing that I like about D&D as well, because what a lot of people don't see on my podcast is like me and the guys sit around and talk for almost an hour before we do anything, and then we stay afterwards and we talk for like another half hour, 30 minutes just about life. Mm-hmm. And catch up with each other, just because it's a bridge to see each other. It's not the pillar that makes the friendship. I think that's the best way that I could describe it.
Exactly. If our campaign were to have fallen apart, we would all still be friends.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. Tim's okay.
I definitely wouldn't have gone back to Chris's place.
Yeah. No, so, the magic cards here don't entice you.
Yeah, definitely not, some of the decks.
Definitely not your not your pillow fort decks.
No, not even slightly.
So all of them.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, there's a couple that I don't mind.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of my favorite class that I've played.
Do you want me to go first, and then you?
Yeah, sure. If you want to say yours.
So I am very partial to a barbarian because my first ever class I made was a barbarian. It was a Warforged barbarian before Warforged was even a real class, or I'm sorry, a real race. It came out as like a Unearthed Arcana. So I played a Warforged, and I named him Tim, as like Tim the Tin Man, I called him originally. And
I like the name.
His whole focus was just, he was a like the size of a Goliath, but he had the childlike heart. So all he wanted to do was just make friends, and the only time he would ever rage was when someone said he didn't want to be his friend.
He was Lenny.
Yeah, basically.
Oh, God. Oh, hey, George.
Hey, George.
Hey, George. Except the rabbits, George. So I'm very partial to barbarians, and I know them inside and out because of that. But at the same time, I love clerics. I think clerics are probably one of the best classes in my head, and I've played only like one or two of them, but every time I have so much fun doing it. And just their versatility is ridiculous. Like, you could go from a frontline tank to a backline support to a midline damage if you want with a fucking cleric. It's crazy.
Yeah,
one of another person in our group played a cleric, and I felt like that's kind of the role she fit into, was like, sometimes she'd be like defending and healing, but like other times she'd be right up in front smacking people with her mace.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lots of healing casters, casting spells. Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think the favorite class for me is Warlock. I'm quite an edgelord. it's hard to justify playing a Warlock in a lot of games though, just because of their leaning of evil. So the one time I played a Warlock, it was a Curse of Strahd. I was in a Curse of Strahd campaign. And like, I figured, oh, look, hey, look, we're fighting evil vampires in an evil gothic setting. Making a Warlock would be good. And then our party decided to have a Paladin. And that kind of railroaded a lot of what I wanted to do.
So this Paladin wasn't a mafioso.
No, he wasn't a mafioso Paladin.
That's a shame. He really missed out.
A shame. I have to agree with you. Warlocks seem super fun, but they have to be done properly, because otherwise you could just go into evil tendencies so easy. Like,
absolutely.
For example, in Tales from Draconia season 2, I think it was like episode, I think it was like 20-ish. I had one of my party members. Basically, he was a warlock. His name was Phantasmo. He was a tiefling. He was a warlock to a... Basically, what he wanted was he wanted it to be a whole pun on Adventure Time. Have you guys ever
seen that? I support that.
Yeah, so he had a familiar named Gunther the Penguin.
Nice.
he had... And his patron was the Ice King. Except... In this world, he was a ancient primordial Remoraz.
Closer to the Lich.
Yeah.
Was his familiar actually a penguin, or was his name just Gunther the Penguin?
He was an actual penguin.
That's cool.
Was it Gunther, Gunther, Gunther?
It was Gunther.
Gunther, okay.
Gunther. Yeah, and anyway, what wound up happening was... His character did not understand that because he would have to sacrifice people. I told him, you have to sacrifice people in order to keep your powers. Typically, they would be young, attractive, rich women. So in my head, I'm like, okay, this is going to be an interesting thing. And the Paladin won't stop it because the Paladin's a mafioso. And the only person that's on a straight blade is Aldous, who is a fighter who isn't very intelligent. So I'm like, okay, he could kind of get away with this for a little bit, and it would probably cause some strife. But if Anthony, the player, told me, like, he doesn't want to be an evil warlock, he doesn't want to do anything evil. So I was like, okay. Fast forward, he winds up sending all this and sacrificing all this to the Ice King and basically refused to try and get him back. So it's just, I managed to get him back through some quick thinking on my part, but it just leads so fast into that evilness that you can't even prepare for it.
Yeah. Yep. Which is the hardest. I think the DM was not a fan of me being a warlock. Even though we're in Strahd, you know, it's still easy to be evil, especially, and it's hard to kind of lead a party that's trying to be good.
Oh, absolutely. It's very difficult, unless, I mean, save for the Celestial Warlock and possibly the Hexblade, depending on what patron gives you the Hexblade. But aside from those two, it's very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So hearts out to any DM currently going through Warlock Syndrome.
Reminds me of did you guys ever watch that video of Joe Manganiello and his character?
No, what's he play?
I'm fairly certain it was a warlock, but he had like this really like long-term character and a famous, again, I can't remember like whose show he went on, but he went on like a famous like either live streamed or pre-recorded D&D campaign, and they brought him on to help them like defeat like their end game, like their final boss essentially. And I want to say it was Vecna, and
if you want, I can clarify everything because I know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Yeah. So Joe Manganiello played a dragonborn paladin to Tiamat, and I think it was Oath of Conquest or something like that. You're right. He did go on. He went on Critical Role, which was live streamed at the time, and essentially did help them defeat Vecna, who was the main bad guy, but then decided to slice off Vecna's hand and then slice off his own hand and put Vecna's hand on where his was.
Yep.
And then teleported to some level of hell. And yep, that was the end of campaign one.
Yeah, and I think one guy, like another guy in their party, sacrificed himself to kill Vecna, and just, I couldn't tell if they were like, this is the coolest thing ever, or like, I'm severely butthurt that all this just happened.
Yeah, one of the characters sold his soul to the Raven Queen for another chance at helping stop Vecna. And basically came back and sacrificed his soul. And they wound up beating Vecna. But then it was just like, that happened. And all the players, I think, were like, did you seriously just do that? But like, kind of like, that's an awesome kind of thing to do.
Yeah. And I think one of the players was talking about it. And he had like used, like, maybe he didn't have any spell slots left, or I don't remember, but he like had the ability to counterspell it, so he could have counterspelled like the teleport or something, but they used it to stop that other guy from actually dying when he sacrificed his soul. I want to say it was something they used it for something, and they, so like, they physically could not do anything to stop what happened. Yeah. And I just remember like Joe Manganiello stands up, walks out of the room, and everyone's like, what the fuck.
Love it.
Yeah. So that's,
I'm reading about it right now.
Yeah. That's kind of like where my head was thinking when you're like, oh, this, you know, warlocks can turn evil so quickly.
Wow. This is like a legit, I'm reading about this right now. It's the Matt Mercer led thing.
Yep. And he, it was a crazy moment. That's for sure. I didn't watch it live, but yeah, the bard was saving a spell slot, to basically cast a wish and save the person who sacrificed the soul. And he instead used it to counterspell one of Vecna's last like big spells he was going to do. I think it was banishment. Or something like that. But regardless, he didn't have a spell slot to save his friend, and he didn't have a spell slot to stop Joe Manganiello from doing that. But I think it's now legit. I think it's a legit thing.
Well, that character exists like in the lore now, doesn't it?
Yes, he does. Yeah. He actually has a page on the like wiki.
Yeah.
He's in
Arkan the Cruel.
He's in Descent from Avernus, I think, now too. Like, he's a legit NPC. Wow. Because it was such like a dramatic thing and everybody loved it. Yeah. So I think they've just wrote it into existence.
That you gotta wonder, like, if it was in any way planned, right? Like, I wanna believe in the spontaneity, but like, it was so like he just did it and like no one could do anything, and it just seemed so perfect. Like, while I was watching it, and I was like, I don't know, man.
I don't know. I can't speak on that. I know that they're the cast members have said multiple times that it's all legit and it's not like scripted. But I don't know. I can't say yay or nay either way. I just enjoy the show.
I want to believe, so I'm going to.
That's probably for the best.
That's fair. Unfortunately, our campaigns are not that cool.
No, yeah, we didn't do anything that neat.
Yeah, mine is not that cool yet either. So
you just need to call Joe Manganiello and get him to come on the show.
I would love to, man.
Hey Joe, can you come on this little podcast and like give us some help, please?
I'm sure he'd be all for it.
Oh yeah, all for it.
We actually did that for a decent amount of time in our podcast. At the end, we would just like pick random celebrities to like say this week's episode is sponsored by blank, because we thought it'd be funny, and like we knew it would never happen, but like what if they heard it.
Waiting on Reese Witherspoon to get back to us. Yeah,
Reese Witherspoon. Paul Rudd, I think, was our first one.
Yeah, Paul Rudd was... Well, we had an episode where we talked about Paul Rudd, and then we got the idea from it.
Yeah, yep.
Gotcha. Yep.
And then it was like Reese... No, it was Reese Witherspoon first. And then we had the Paul Rudd special.
Are you sure?
Like, maybe? I could have sworn they Paul Rudd was first. Both of them were early. And then we did like Chris Evans and Brandon Ruth. Basically, anyone who we knew played Magic.
Did we except do for Joe Manganiello?
I don't think we ever did Joe. No, okay. I don't think we ever did.
I know we did Henry Cavill, because he's also a huge nerd.
Yeah. Henry Cavill's amazing. But I digress. So, I don't know.
Sorry for that long tangent.
No, that's totally fine. I just lost my train of thought and where I was going with that.
He's dreaming of Joe Manganiello.
I am dreaming
who
of Joe
isn't,
Manganiello.
Man?
Yeah, that's true. Who isn't?
Actually, Travis Willingham, not going to lie, I kind of have a little bit of a man crush on him. If you don't know him, he is
Google
the...
Him.
Yeah, he does a lot of voice acting. If you're familiar with like any animated thing with Thor, he's basically it. Any like Thor from Marvel. He does a lot of anime, so he was in Bleach for multiple different characters. I believe he was, if you watch Full Metal Alchemist, he was Colonel Roy Mustang. He is one hell of a man, that's for sure.
Wait, is
I'm looking at him now. Apparently, he was something in Guardians of the Galaxy.
He was?
Well, I just see a lot of... No, not the video game. I just see a lot of pictures of him at the world premiere of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, I have no idea.
So, I mean, I'm inferring. It could be. I could be wrong.
But, where was I going with this? Anyway, I think the next thing I wanted to talk about was... because I don't have a lot of Magic the Gathering players anymore, like they don't see a lot of the inspiration that comes from that world or from their settings with Magic that I haven't placed in my world. So like, I'm sure you two are familiar with the Gods of Theros.
Mm-hmm.
So Theros, for those of you who don't know, is a Magic the Gathering block that came out, I think, originally in 2013. And has since been revisited once. But that's where I get all my gods from. So I shouldn't say all of them, but a majority of them. So even like, where are they?
Do you keep the same names?
Yes. So Athreos is the god of passage. We have Afara, which the main, the republic that we're currently in the campaign is called the Afarian Republic, named after her. Then there's Erebos, Heliod, Eroas, all of them are in here.
All right.
But on top
Parametra, the god of weed.
Yes. There and where is it? So the Ifarian Republic in my world is very much religious, if the name doesn't tell you anything. So a lot of their places are named after gods. So there's a few gods that I don't have from Theros. Like I have a god named Telamor, who is the god of rebels. And the reason for that is because in my first campaign I ever DM'd, I had a player who was a cleric who wanted to have his god be Telamor Dew, like the whiskey bottle, and he was a drunk.
Oh, nice.
So I'm like, that's hilarious. I'll let it be. So then I kind of adopted it. But that also leads into the idea of Xenagos. So,
okay. God of Revels.
So do you guys know anything about the original Theros block lore?
A little bit.
So Xenagos was a planeswalker and then became a god only to be killed by Elspeth.
That's right. That's Elspeth wanted to kill because he like killed her family or something, right?
Yeah, something crazy like that. So
but she died in the process.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah, because in the beginning of Theros Beyond Death, she's dead. She has to come back.
Yeah, which it's a Greek mythological setting. I mean, it's going to happen no matter what.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And in this world, I use that idea. So not only is Elspeth a character, Xenagos is also a character. And he is very much in the world, but everyone assumes he's dead. So, and then on top of all of that, I also have... I have the world factions are the Ravnica factions or guilds.
Okay, so you kind of mixed the two planes together.
Yeah, I've mixed the two planes together. So they and I've changed some things like the Azorius, they don't have like they have law mages and stuff like that, so like they have most of them are intact, but they mainly do like lawyers, judges, that kind of thing. And then they have law mages, which are more in this kind of world, like capital police for the main city, but also bailiffs and jailers and things like that. So things have been changed minutely in order to kind of get this kind of to mesh together pretty well. But it's just... It's nice to have somebody who understands the magic
setting. So like yeah. So do you keep the colors of the gods equal to the guild? So like is Clothis the god that leads like the Gruul guild?
No, actually. So they're two separate things. So the color of mana is definitely something that I have played with a little bit. So two of my characters now are devoted to Mogus. Well, one is devoted to Bogus. The other one was a chosen champion, and he doesn't really know that, but he does know that. He has an inkling of it, but he doesn't understand it. It was actually... So
Are you turning your party evil?
No, I'm not. The paladin... Because Mogus in this world is a little different. So he is the god of slaughter, but he's not... Basically, what's going on is something so big is happening that all the gods have to come together. So Mogus is choosing people to come together.
Got it. Yeah, I was going to say, if your idol is literally named the God of Slaughter, I feel like you have one of those, like, are we the baddies moment?
you could be a butcher, Chris, the God of Slaughter and prime cut of beef.
Right. He's God of Slaughter and chuck roast.
He definitely does not have as much, like, as many followers as like Afara, Heliod, and other things like that, or even his brother Aroas. But except for an area that I've deemed the Savage Lands, where a lot of the more monstrous races reside, and there is currently a city there devoted to Mogus, whose inhabitants typically stem from like ogres, orcs, goblins, minotaurs, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure, like, Mogus worshippers, like, are all about blood rituals and ritual sacrifices and things like that. So I'm wondering if you toned that down.
Yes, I did. Okay. So,
Oh, sorry. You already answered. I was going to say, or you lean fully into it. You make your the people coming in, they have to bring a vial of someone else's blood. You don't ask questions as to where they got it.
That's smart. That's actually a good idea. You know, bring some props into the game.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, would I normally have that happen? Yeah, I'm not. I'm kind of exploring the idea of like good people chosen by a not necessarily good god, or like a good viewed god, and what that means for a person's struggle. Because in my, what I do as a DM, I like to take a metaphorical baseball bat that the players give me and I label it backstory. I then proceed to wrap it in barbed wire and filling in some of the holes, and then I beat them repeatedly over the head with it until they're like, I don't even know what you just did to me, Andy.
All right.
Like, it's an interesting analogy.
Sounds like a thing Mogus would like.
Yeah.
So, for example, going back to my older brother's character, because I fucked with him the most so far, he also, on top of all of that, like with his dad and everything, he didn't know he had a daughter. And now the daughter is getting in some shit that he doesn't know about, and he's going to find out about probably in the next few episodes. And I'm excited to see what happens. And to make it even worse, my older brother has a daughter named Giovanna, and I may or may not have named his in-game daughter Giovanna.
Oh, that is that's so messed up, man.
Yeah. I guess, in my opinion, right, like, if he's in-game, he doesn't know he has a daughter, and his daughter's doing dumb shit, why in-game would his character care?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so, quick question. Is this episode gonna air before he finds out? Does he listen to the podcast?
I don't know. I've already told him, like, so his character's older brother, who was an estranged older brother, is the one who told him that he has a daughter and that she's in some shit and that he needs to check up on her. He has yet to check up on her, and it's been about 4 or 5 sessions. So
let her live her thing, you know. Yeah. Just let her go do her own thing. Wait, if she dies.
Yeah, maybe he's playing the aloof dad. You know, like, if you put too many boundaries on her, she's gonna act out. So,
this dad went out for cigarettes, and he's still looking.
Well, he had to go and get the cigarettes from the other side of the planet.
Oh, for sure. Right. I mean, that's where you find the best cigarettes.
Yikes.
So. where did I go on? Oh, so I was saying with the mana thing, I've definitely played with it before. So, like, the two people who have the Mogus, like, kind of essence, or, like, the Mogus influence, a lot of times when they go berserk, like, one of them is a barbarian, so it helps me out a lot easier. But when my older brother, when I see him get invested in, like, he's truly mad because of, like, something that happened to his character or something his character is doing, what I do is I have them go in this uncontrollable rage where they kind of black out, and everybody else sees their eyes as like one being red and one being black, kind of to like signify like something's going on with that.
Okay. So you watched Moon Knight. Okay.
I did not.
Oh, okay.
Spoilers. He has different colored eyes.
Yeah. It's actually, he's the god of Mogus.
He's the god of Mogus.
I just have to say,
yeah,
if I were in this campaign, I think you'd have to kill off my character, because I would never stop making imposter Amogus jokes, like, for the entire time.
I would just kill you, dude. Like, I wouldn't kill your character.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's the best thing, is, like, I tell them, like, the whole motif of the campaign is, like, don't judge a book by its cover, and what is the definition of a monster, and what is free will. So, like, those, like, few cornerstones are, like, the epitome of the campaign, because we've played with it a lot, and I challenge them at every turn. So, like, if I like to play devil's advocate with them, so if they lean heavily one way, I will challenge them with an NPC that leans the other way.
That is way more.
That's, yeah, we were pirates, ahoy, where's treasure, here's booty. You're over here like,
yeah, what is life, what is morality, and we're like, yo-ho, yo-ho.
So I think it's just my DMing style. I prefer to make games where they, like, challenge a person, like, morally and mentally.
What's the purpose of life?
Why live?
Why am I burdened with this mortal coil?
With such like an existential like angst, they're just leaving your house. Like, what am I doing? Why are we here?
You should record every session and then record the half hour of everyone sitting in the shower crying.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I make it sound so much worse than what it actually is. It's a lot of like subtle things, but I think once they find out like the BBEG's main story, like why he's doing what he's doing, and once they figure out who it is, I feel like that's going to come a lot more into play. And I feel like maybe it's just me, but I feel like having a straightforward campaign where it's just simple, like good and bad, and like you don't really experiment with the fields of gray. Just to me, it gets, how do I want to word this where I don't insult a lot of people out there? It is not entertaining. It is not entertaining for me to play because it's just stereotypical. Like after a while it gets repetitive. You know what I mean? Like I want to have
I agree for sure. It's just really hard to try to DM a campaign that starts to get into the realm of metaphysical thought. So kudos to you
for
bringing psychology into Dungeons and Dragons.
Well, that's my background. I have a psychology degree.
Oh, dear Lord.
It all makes sense now. There we go.
Yeah, we're a bunch of engineers, so we just want to roll dice and see big numbers.
So you probably made, like, one of your characters, your guy goes, like, up against some, like, NPC that wants to sleep with their mother, and you look at them, and you're like, how does that make you feel?
Oh god.
No, but I made him choose whether or not to kill his own dad because the dad was an imposter.
And he didn't know it was an imposter.
No. Wait, he did.
Are you saying
he had to hide? Huh?
There's an imposter Amogus.
Kick him.
Oh my god. There's the imposter Amogus. Oh my god, that's hilarious.
That's really cool. When I've DM'd, I've tried to do that, not to that degree, but that's obviously like one thing I like to do when I DM is have each character kind of have like their own little secret background or something interesting. And I actually do it by having the players write that secret about other players.
Ooh, interesting.
So like you have like the introduction campaign, you know? Yeah. And, you know, every character kind of starts to get to know each other a little bit. And then I like to afterwards message each player and be like, all right, now that you know this player a little bit, give me something about them that you would know, or like something else that like is a secret for them to figure out. And that way it kind of helps build the story a little bit where the players feel like they've been involved.
That's really cool. I like that. So I go with the more, I guess, the road more traveled kind of thing. I have my characters make their own backstory and then they give it to me and I mesh it into the world and I keep secrets from them. So like, for example, I had a PC give me a really simple backstory. All he said was, I want to fuck with Sam and I want my axe to be my most precious thing in the world. And I was like, okay. And I turned that into, this was revealed in one of the sessions coming soon, but future Andy, if this has not been released yet, edit this out. I basically told him, I had him have a vision or like a dream, basically saying, like showing what happened to him that on this specific day where he became a traveler. The only other thing he said was like, he wanted his family to be massacred in front of him. So he was a barbarian.
Your friends okay?
Yeah. They've been playing too many like existential games with you, man. Like now they're like, I want to see my whole family die.
Could you imagine like going into a D&D campaign and be like, hi guys, thank you for playing. This is going to be a lot of fun. Tell me how you suffered.
Yeah.
Tell me how you suffered in life. No. So that's what he wanted his character to do. Or like what his character, what he wanted to have happen with his character. This is also the barbarian, so who knows what. Then another player recently joined that said something similar. Like he wanted his family massacred. And I'm like,
what?
Interesting. I don't know. I just went with it. So I put the two together and I was like, they live together at the same town and they have no idea. Because the town was so big that they had no idea and they haven't talked about it yet. So that's the way I go about it to create secrets is I like to make connections with people's backstories to intertwine them together and somehow have it so that they have some kind of connection with another player. But
that's cool. Yeah. Yeah. I try. That's part of the reason why I try to do what I do is to help create those interconnections. Cause I think that's important because nothing's less exciting than like a campaign where it's just like four strangers that come together at a job board and be like, hey, look at this.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean?
You guys like really, you employ all these things. The only campaign I ever DM'd, I'm feeling inadequate here because it was like a food fight in a place called Flavortown and Pie Fieri kidnapped like the like, princess or something. Like I forget like the whole backstory. I could probably find it, honestly.
That's amazing.
I find it in my G Drive.
So
one of our
there is no like existential like what are these decisions we're making? It's like, no, we're fighting like candy gingerbread men.
But that's okay.
I mean, that's also fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Because every person has their own DMing style. It's just a matter of finding it. So for a long time, I tried to be a little bit more like Matt Mercer, where I wanted it all to be super serious with some giggles and have it be like these crazy things. And I'm like, I just hated it. So I take a lot of influence from him and like certain things that I do. But I have my own spin on it to the point where I know what I want to have happen, and I take more of the psychological road in fucking with my players than what Matt Mercer did.
And yeah, thus the crying in the shower.
Yes, thus the crying in the shower. But if you don't like that kind of style, that's totally fine. Or if you don't DM that kind of style, that's totally fine. I think having a food fight in Flavortown involving Pie Fieri sounds fucking fun. Like that sounds very amazing. Much was, yeah.
It was also like, it's the only thing I've ever DM'd, and I co-DM'd it with another, the DM of our other campaign, because he was like, well, or I went to him, I was like, I'd like to like DM, but I'm nervous because I'm not that creative. And he was like, well, why don't we do it? Like, I'll help you out with like all the creative stuff. And then we'll just like kind of DM together. So it was really fun. I had a lot of fun with it. I feel like I did okay. You know, I was, I'm not good at accents, but they were just absurd enough that they felt like they fit into the world of Flavortown.
I am the absolute worst player. If you're a DM, every NPC you meet has to have a name. Every NPC you meet has to have some kind of weird accent in a backstory.
So I am... Oh, that's what you're saying as a player? Like, you just
like
assume
if,
that?
We'll go to a... No, no, I like, we'll go to a town or something like that. And then he'll say, you'll go to the barkeep. And I'm like, what's his name?
Oh, you're the one you of know? Those? Oh,
I'm yeah. one of those guys.
Yeah, you do that a lot.
You are...
I like to put DMs on the spot.
You're the DM's bane. So I told this to my players because I thought it was funny. But when they catch me by surprise, like with an NPC that I didn't have prepared, you can tell because the names go from, hold on, let me find a name that I have in here. So the names would go from something ridiculous like, where is it? Where's Salura? Gondor to fucking Pablo.
Oh yeah. Yeah. In our last session, we had to like rebuild up the troops on our ship because we were doing like a pirate attack on another ship or something like that. Mm-hmm. And we're like, hey, we need like eight people. And the DM was like, oh, what a coincidence. We happen to have the Johnson octuplet. And they're all just.
Yes.
And I'm just like, it. Okay.
Yeah.
And I guess we have the Johnsons.
Our DM is like pretty witty. So it really helped out when we would like be a dick to him because he like was pretty able to like roll with the punches. I think like I'm a nightmare for DMs in like another way because I just, if something's happening, I'm gonna like force it to like continue to have like I if we're world building and we're role playing and stuff, and an opportunity like presents itself that like maybe he didn't like, they didn't want us to actually like follow through with, I'm like, no, we're gonna do this. So like in our pirate campaign, we came across, like, we were trying to gather information, so we were going through the town, we went into this store, and it was run by like this old, like, he was like a slug person, and I was talking to him, and then I was talking with his daughter, and his daughter was nervous because their prom was coming up, so I was like, I'll go to prom with you. And so the DM had to like make up a whole session where we just go to prom.
That is fantastic. That is amazing.
Yeah,
it's a wonder we actually finished this campaign.
Well, it took us 3.5 years, so
I mean, that's fair, but we did also have a 3-month session on prom.
That is true.
That are, I sold drugs kidding? At.
You're kidding.
No,
you
not even
went to prom for 3 months.
No, well, no, like, it took 3 months of like play time, like 3 months of sessions to get through the prom event.
We weren't playing that often then.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Okay. It was like, it was only 2 sessions, I think, or the session where we decided we were gonna go to prom because we were doing like investigation, and then the session where we actually went to prom, and that was like, they were 3 months in between.
Gotcha. Okay.
So yeah, we had 3 months to prepare for prom.
That's
amazing. Yeah. My character sold drugs there. It was great.
Mm-hmm. I danced, man. Prom. Oh my God. I had a great time.
Yeah.
That sounds like a fun campaign. That sounds amazing.
It was. It was a lot of fun.
It was a good time.
Our poor DM put up with us for like 3.5 years, and afterwards he was like, yeah, I think I might take a break from DMing.
Hey, I feel it. The burnout is real.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think our group is going to start switching to like mini episodes of different things. Mm-hmm. So we're exploring like other role-playing games right now. So he really wants to play a game called Delta Green.
Okay. I've never heard of it.
It is a modern take on
Call of Cthulhu.
Oh, yeah.
So you are an investigator fighting against like Nyloth and other Cthulhu creatures in modern time. But it's like hyper realistic in that like you get shot once, like your character's dead.
Oh damn.
And so it really focuses more on the investigation and the mind messing with and you know, the psychological damage that you could do. I think the preparation is going to take a lot of time just because like you have to prepare the clues and every character kind of has to be fleshed out and things like that. But I think having like a mini campaign in that session would be really cool.
So what you're saying is that sounds like something right up my alley.
Yes. Yes. But you're not DMing for me because I don't want to cry.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it that bad.
I don't want to. It's the perfect time to do it then. You're going through probably seeing horrors, and it's like, hey, Tim, why don't you tell us about your worst childhood memory? Relive that.
Yeah, right. Oh, I mean, that would be good. That would be good. But my problem is, as a DM, is I'm not good at puzzles. I'm not good with coming up with puzzles, and my party is, I'm sorry for if you guys listen to this, but y'all is a bunch of freaking idiots when it comes to puzzles. I shit you not, like, oh my God, there was this one time, they were stuck on a puzzle for like an hour and a half, and it was just like this simple, the picture frame moved on a hinge. And there was evidence of scratches on the floor following like where the picture frame would have opened. And they got stuck on that for like an hour and a half. And all they had to do was like light the braziers right next to it. And I was like, what? Why? Like,
you know, some people just have a hard time with puzzles.
I know. So I don't do a lot of puzzles anymore. I have to start doing them again. The ones that I do are well thought out, but like, I can't do a puzzle like every session or something like that. Like, that's just crazy to me. Or multiple puzzles in a session. I can't do it.
Yeah.
We had a lot of puzzles. Right. Yeah. We had a lot of puzzles early on.
Yep.
And then I think just over time, the DM was just like, I don't want to do puzzles anymore.
Well, I think it's the same thing. Cause I feel like you're either coming up with them yourself or basing them off of like one you've seen online, but like tailoring it to the campaign. And that's a lot of work. Or you could just completely steal one and like not really care, you know, and like, but then that kind of is pretty evident, you know? So I feel like it takes a lot of work to fit the puzzle correctly. And
oh yeah, one thing you'll learn, Tim, if you DM more, DMing takes a lot of work outside of the game.
Yeah.
There is so much preparation that goes into being, I guess you could be a DM, but be a bad DM if you don't do any prep, but a good DM does the prep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which
I'd
is
probably be a bad DM. Yeah.
Which is part of the reason why I think we're starting to shift a little bit to these like mini campaigns, just because the preparation time is a lot less.
Oh yeah. Yep.
It is a lot. Just speaking from somebody who has to deal with it a lot. I have spent 2 years on this campaign, and it is like, that's outside of us playing D&D. Like, it took me 2 years to make this continent, to make the world, and to get is I went full depth. Like, I went from top down creation myth down to the cities. Like, it was it was a lot, but I did it, and I'm very proud of it, but it was a lot of work. And there was a hold on. So, like, going back to the whole stealing ideas, like puzzles and riddles kind of thing, there is one that I'm very proud of that I did. I stole it offline, and I made it and adjusted it into, like, the D&D theme, and it's the first indication of what the main motif was for the campaign. And if you guys are interested, I can read it to you, and I'll see what, and we'll see what you come
we'll
up
solve
with.
It. Let's go.
Let's go. Bring it.
Let's do it.
The
do
answer's
it.
Four. You get fucked.
42. 42.
It says, in quotes, "Are gods willing to prevent evil but not able? Then they are not omnipotent. Are they able but not willing? Then they are malevolent. Are they both able and willing? Then whence cometh evil? Are they neither able nor willing? Then why call them gods?"
That's not a riddle.
Yeah, is that?
That's not a riddle.
It is.
The answer is.
The answer is six.
Is man. The.
No, the answer is free will. Why call them gods? If any of those are true, why call them gods?
Hmm.
Free will or belief?
See, you're pulling your psycho stuff.
I'll be right back. I have to go cry for a bit.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was for example, that was one of them that I found online, and it wasn't so much a riddle, but I turned it into a riddle originally, and it was, or but I found it and I really liked it, but my freaking players, like, I put a lot of effort into like molding it into the proper format, because it was originally about like the real world religion. So I had to mold it into this, and he got it in like the split second I said it, he got it. And I'm like, what the fuck, man? It takes you 20 minutes to fucking figure out that you had to light a brazier to open a goddamn door. But when you read this riddle, you get it in 2 seconds? What the hell?
Well, it was, I mean, when you're talking about like the decisions of gods, I feel like free will is the jump you make, right? Like, that's always
that's
the discussion.
That is very true.
You know, I find that the gods can tell us a lot about our personalities.
On that,
I don't know where I'm going with that. Yeah.
All right, well,
no, I know a great segue for that.
Subject.
Okay.
What god or color combination, well, I guess I'll say god from Theros, most identifies with you? Like, what god do you like more? Most.
Tim, you 100% side with Mogus.
I love Slaughter. I'm just a big old Slaughter boy.
Oh my god.
So it comes down for me, there's two gods that I play the most. At least in my magic decks.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing one of them is Big Daddy P.
Mm. Okay.
True.
Purphoros.
Yeah.
I love the card Purphoros, God of the Forge. Amazing card. And it's then the other god that I play the most is Heliod.
Really?
Which is really funny, because that completely combats against the color pairings that I actually like.
Yeah. Because you're a white-blue player, aren't you?
No, I'm Golgari, green-black.
Oh, gotcha. See, when I hear Pillow Fort, I instantly think of Azorius.
I only have a couple Pillow Fort decks, and they're the exact decks that Tim hates the most.
Gotcha. Okay.
He says a couple, but he's got a few.
I guess technically the god that is the most associated with myself is Farrakka.
Goddess of Affliction.
Goddess of Affliction.
You've got a Sithis deck.
Yeah, I guess, but that's the only time I ever have anything to do with Karametra, God of Good Bud. She's only in the 99.
I don't know, like, who my...
I think yours would probably be Fennex.
Which one's Fennex?
Goddess of Deception. That is the one that says tap a target creature and then target opponent mills.
Yeah, Tim likes mill.
No, I fucking hate mill.
Tim loves mill.
Chris wants me to like mill, and I don't understand. It's because, I exactly understand it. It's because he lost a bet or an argument, and he can't let it go.
Fine. Tim likes Erebos.
Honestly, I do. Erebos, I was thinking, because I thought about building an Erebos deck. I never did it.
Like Erebos or Athreos. Those are probably the two. You at heart are a black player. It's just a question of what's the second color?
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, I could be persuaded for either of those.
Is it any shocker that one of my favorites is Eroas and the other one is Xenagos?
No.
The God of Victory.
Yeah, that's what the one that gives all your creatures menace.
That's pretty good. What are his colors?
White, red.
White, red. Yeah, that's pretty white, red.
Yeah. But I would have to say that, like, as far as, like, a god that most associates with me, God, I don't freaking know.
That's a hard question.
Like, I can be very chaotic at times, so part of me wants to go with, like, Keranos, the god of the storms, but the other part of me is, like, I'm just a simple, humble magic player and D&D DM. Like, so maybe I go with, like, Heliod or Afara.
Your crew fix.
I'm crew fix. Yes, God of Horizons.
Yeah.
The God of...
Look at that. Knowledge and trickery. You just dropped a God-related riddle on us.
Yeah, that's a good point. That is a good point. And my most... Well, I shouldn't say my most...
You're a perma-DM, so, like, you have future vision.
Now, would that be crew fix or Clothis?
I think that's crew fix. I guess Clothis also. But crew fix has... He's like the god of time.
Yeah, he's the enigmatic god of mysteries, horizons, and the passage of time. Whereas Clothis...
She's the god of destiny.
She is the god of destiny, but also kind of keeps in line with the cosmic balance.
Yeah, I think she's the god of balance balance, right? Where Krufix is the god of the future. So, like, Krufix is like, this shit's going to happen. And Clothis is like, yo, timeout, dog.
Yo, correction.
Yo, correction, hold up. Hold up. Exactly.
Yeah.
And Krufix is like, tough luck. Here's how it's going to work.
Exactly. Because Krufix is like the top dog god out of Theros. Like, no one fucks with Krufix. It's like the high ground. You don't fuck with the high ground.
Oh no,
dude! I was just watching
your arms and legs.
Literally, just watched that clip early. I don't know why it popped up on like my feed. I was like, "Oh,
mine too."
Don't try it.
It literally says in the Art of War, "Do not fuck with the high ground" in all capital and bold.
And he did.
He fucked with the high ground. Lesson there. Yeah. But all right. Well, I know I mentioned this to you guys off screen too. That planeswalkers in my world are a thing, and they are demigods. So they are like a Ajani, for example. I took inspiration from, again, the Theros blocks Ajani, which was the mentor of heroes. So Ajani in this world is essentially an anointed demigod that trains the next heroes. So if you guys ever seen the Disney movie Hercules, you know Phil?
Yeah.
that's a Johnny in this world.
All right.
Oh, okay.
It's actually funny because one of the characters in my game, Aldis, the fighter, the straight edge person that I mentioned earlier, he is basically a chosen of Eroas, but he is an atheist. Like, he doesn't believe in gods or anything like that. So a Johnny was like chosen by Eroas to like talk to the character Aldis and be like, yo, bro, bitch slap him and say, wake the fuck up. Like, gods are real. Which definitely probably made Aldis have to go cry and sit in the shower for 30 minutes. But he is basically being chosen now because, unfortunately, the player who played Aldis had to take a break for an unforeseeable amount of time due to schedule and stuff like that. So while he is gone, Aldis is going to be training with a Johnny, which I don't know if that's come out yet based on when this episode comes out, but I mean,
we got a lot of spoilers in this episode.
Yeah. I don't really care because it's going to be coming out either way. Like, it's just a matter of, like, it's already set in stone. It's just a matter of my party stop fucking around and get through this fucking dungeon that they're in. And dude, I shit you not, I've had this dungeon planned for over 2 months and my party has dick footed around for 2 months, like in real world time. And finally got into the first part of the dungeon maybe two sessions ago.
So how often do you guys meet? Is it weekly or is it like...
So we
sounds like
do,
a lot.
We used to do weekly, but that got too difficult with me and I needed more time. So I told them like, okay, we'll do every other week. So now we're doing every other week. And then on the off weeks, we have a small get together where we talk about the previous episode. So for me, I feel like 2 weeks is a very long time to go and people will probably forget like what happened. So I like to have this extra session to kind of like keep their minds refreshed. Granted, if we don't do it, we don't do it. It's whatever, but I like to have it that way. And it also gives them an opportunity to kind of ask me questions that they wouldn't normally have a time to. So like the big what if questions, like, what if we did this way? And I would tell them, well, that probably would not have worked out for you, and this is why, kind of thing. So it kind of gives me an opportunity to show them a little bit more on my side of things and also have a mutual appreciation for what each side of the DM screen does.
I mean, coming, like, you got two guys here who would probably go at minimum at least a month. And we had to write everything down because,
yeah,
we would come back.
It's actually kind of cool to have a log, though.
We were doing that before. It was that few and far between. We did that since day one. And it was really helpful. But then especially when life got in the way and COVID got in the way and you just come back and you're like, I don't remember what we did. What did we write down?
Yeah. So I tell them to write notes and a few of them do. But I tell them because there's things that I won't mention for months and then I'll mention it and they'll be like, why does that ring a bell? I'm like, I don't know. Why does it ring a bell? Why does it ring a bell, Sam? Why don't you tell me? That's my favorite line. That and you can certainly try. Those are my two favorite lines to give them.
You can certainly try. Nice.
I feel like our DMs
roll me
at 20.
A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
you can try.
Like, they say these things, and I just look at them, I'm like, you want to do this? And they said yes. And I said, okay, you can certainly try. Roll a d20 for me. And that's, like, my little call line. Like, that's going to be a very hard roll.
You done goofed.
You done fucked up. Like, for example, this happened recently before we had the one character turn a little evil and send the other guy to the different dimension. I think it was the episode before. The only reason I remember this episode name is because I found it hilarious and I thought we were going to get demonetized for it, but we didn't. We called the episode Cockfight.
Okay.
And it was basically like Aldis was fighting the Paladin's older brother in a boxing ring and like just going full out punches. And they were basically like having a dick measuring contest. Which I thought was fun, which is why we called it Cockfight. But what what happened the episode prior to that was they tried to sneak into this wrestling or boxing bar arena building that Sam, that the Paladin's older brother owned. And they, to sneak in, they tried to cast, I think it was Minor Illusion, over the Paladin's face so that no one would recognize him. And they basically made him look like Garfield over his face with just an elf body everywhere else. And I'm like, I'm sorry, you're trying to do what? And I'm like, roll a deception check. So, of course, he crit failed. And what I said was that the Garfield mask looked abnormally large compared to everything else. And the mouth itself was not moving as, as the Paladin was speaking. So I'm just like, why would you do that? Like, why would you try to cast Minor Illusion and have it be Garfield? It, I mean, it could have worked, but again, it's Minor Illusion. It's not like it's going to do much. You know what I mean? But yeah, that's just me.
Oh, Garfield.
I know, right?
Was it on a Monday?
I think that specific episode was recorded on a Monday.
No wonder it didn't work.
Yeah, even more fitting.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, I think that is a good time as ever to come to an end. Thank you guys for coming out and having this lovely conversation with me, and hopefully we can do it again in the future. But I wanted to give you guys time to kind of talk about your podcast and plug yourselves, and you know, where would they be? Where would our viewers be able to go out and find you?
Tim, this is my moment.
Oh God.
I've been practicing for a year for this. So yeah, we are Casual Commander Podcast. You can find us on Facebook. You can just search for Casual Commander Podcast. You can find us pretty much on any podcasting service that you may use. So we're on all platforms if you search for Casual Commander. We are, like Andy said, our main focus is the Commander format of Magic, but we basically talk about all things Magic. We do update about once a week, and we basically talk about all the dumb shit that we talked on here about. Yeah, at least we sound the same as.
Our big thing is talking about Commander. So any news that impacts it, any sets that come out, we like to talk about how pretty much we just talk about what we think is going to be bombs in Commander. And it's a lot of jokes, a lot of good times, a lot of Chris and I arguing. So if you really want to listen to two guys who sound like they hate each other but don't, we're for you.
Speak for yourself, dude.
You guys also talk about selling jars of farts online.
Oh no! Hold on, hold on a second.
I kept that soundbite, by the way.
We don't talk. We don't sell them. We talk about the medical implications of the distribution.
I wish there was a way I could play this.
I don't know. Well, you could send it to me, and I could add it into the episode. I don't know.
Do we want me to go on the rant again? Because I'm still locked and loaded. I've got a lot of opinions.
We did have to edit. All right. I think this is our opportunity, Tim, to really bring out our hate for boba tea and fart jars.
They are not equal, Chris. One of those things is beloved by many.
To them, they're equal to. You're right. People do love fart jars.
The other thing is canned flatulence, Chris. They're not equal.
Well, boba tea basically is jarred flatulence to me, okay?
You are so dramatic. That is not even close to being this. People could potentially have gotten hepatitis. No one's ever gotten hepatitis from boba tea.
You don't know that. When's the last time you had a boba tea?
You know what? You got me. I've never had one, but guaranteed I would drink a boba tea and have less anxiety about potentially getting hepatitis than if I sniffed a fart out of a jar.
I'm worried about the fact that you're considering buying a fart jar. I think they're
Chris, but you've created the scenario where we have to compare the two.
Okay, so we have a per capita, right? Are we doing a per capita comparison? Because yes.
Casual Commander comes out every Sunday.
You can catch them this coming Sunday, where I will be a guest on their episode, and I don't know if you kept the fart jar thing in there or not, but there was a tangent.
I took it out.
Yeah, no. But there's not really a place for that.
Next episode, next time.
And this will be the place for it, because you know what? We're explicit here. So with that said, everybody, we'll catch you next time on Tales from Daconia, where we pick back up with episode, I think it's 26 or 27. But anywho, later, everybody. Have a good night.
See you guys.
See you guys.